Welcome teacher sellers to the Grow with Angie and April podcast. Angie and April are two full-time teachers pay teacher sellers who chat with each other daily about their businesses. They're opening up their conversations to help you grow your teacher store. Are you ready to listen in? Here we go.
Hey Angie, how's it going?
It's going okay. How are you?
Good. So I'm excited because today we're answering all of the questions we got about hiring. So we're talking about VAs to full-time employees, kind of hired it all. And you can join in on the conversation about this in our mastermind group at growwithusmastermind.com. And you'll find the show notes and any links we discuss at growwithuspodcast.com. So how excited are you to do an episode we've already done, but 2 years later?
I know. I'm excited to see like the change. I never actually went back and listened to the old one. So I'll have to go back and listen to it and see how much I have really changed with hiring people in the last year and a half.
Yeah, I went back and looked at the post along with it, but didn't listen to it. And I can tell you that everything is totally different. So yeah,
I had an editor back then, and that was probably it.
Yeah, we talked mostly about what VAs are. So I don't even use the word VA anymore. So should be an interesting one.
Yes, I'm excited. We're excited today to talk with Caitlin Mitchell from EB Academics. She does a lot of hiring in her company. I am excited to hear about it. I know April has told me a lot about the hiring that she does, and I'm excited to just get another person's info. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We're really excited to chat with you. Seems like we talk a lot about hiring already, so it's really nice to just be able to throw some questions at you. And then, of course, we have to do our disclaimer, which is that none of the three of us are accountants or ever want to be. So please, please, please talk to your accountant about hiring and properly filing paperwork. We just know from our own experiences, and things are very different too. Like I know, especially from California to Arizona, even the differences there are pretty huge. So
yes, I can say I've had many conversations with labor lawyers. Let's just put it that way in terms of what is acceptable in certain states with the employees that we have kind of all over the country.
Yes, I can tell you for sure that my least favorite state to deal with when it comes to the hiring stuff is California. Even though I love California and grew up there, it has been very tricky to have an employee in California. And all the rules are different too. So even like paid time off. So it has definitely been interesting. So we have a lot of questions that we got in the group. The first being kind of, well, I guess we should talk about the different types of employees that we have, because we keep saying like employees and hiring, but a lot of TPTers have contractors, so 1099, not employees. That's a huge difference. And again, we're not accountants, but why don't you tell us a little bit about how many employees you have, how many contractors you have, explain the difference maybe.
Sure, absolutely. I'm not going to explain the difference because I don't want to get it wrong and be held liable for anything.
It is very different, and I think it differs from state to state, but yes, there's very specific criteria. If anyone's ever like, hey, am I doing this right? Please like ask your accountant or at least like look up what the qualifications are to be a 1099 contractor because they're very specific.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. And especially, like you said, state to state. And so that's the thing. We actually have only employees. We do have one person that works for us on Upwork, and that is our editor. And that is because they fall within certain criteria after speaking to our labor lawyer that we can use that person through Upwork and still, you know, abide by the various laws in which we need to follow. But we have, gosh, two full-time employees and eight part-time employees. And then one virtual assistant overseas and an editor who is paid through Upwork.
Awesome. Angie, do you want to share? Because I know that you've hired a few other people since, you know, 2 years ago.
I have mostly contractors and I probably have about eight people total. And I've just hired as I see a need in my business where I don't want to do that thing anymore. So like I've hired a Pinterest person who does my Pinterest and I have a social media person who does that. I just started adding them on slowly. And that's kind of how I started hiring. And now I have people for basically everything except for product creation I'm still doing and ads. So it's really nice.
You know, one thing that's been interesting for me as having employees versus contractors, that I actually really enjoy having employees, is just the fact that they really are a part of our business's vision and our goals. And not to say that a contractor necessarily isn't, but there's just been a different level of buy-in that I've noticed with our team members who are full-time employees, and certain things that we're able to offer them, like paid time off, sick leave, things like that, that we weren't able to do, right, with contractors and things like that. So I will say that the aspect of having an employee versus a contractor has been an incredibly fruitful and positive experience for me as an owner of the business.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. But I know we'll have some listeners who are like, oh my gosh, that sounds expensive. And it
yes,
is expensive.
It is.
But I think too, when you get to the point where you need to have someone as an employee, you have that ability to do so. Like you said, it's hard to kind of keep people, especially not necessarily because they're contractors, but because usually with contractors, they do small projects for you, and not a lot of people can really necessarily live off of your like tiny project you throw here and there, whatever. So with a lot of contractors, those are usually like what Angie said, where they're like a Pinterest person. So they work for a lot of different people. Like, it's their business to be a contractor, to do what they're good at. But the nice thing about having an employee is you can really grow them, direct them, all of the things that you really can't do with a contractor. So I definitely agree with that 100%. We actually just, I think it was about 6 months ago, started a 401k. Never thought that would happen for even our part-time employees to get in on, because we realized that the people who were not just full-time but part-time with us, you know, they had left jobs where they had investment accounts, or they had some sort of, I don't know, they had some sort of retirement plan. And so we kind of needed to do that because they were working for us primarily.
Right. And you want to obviously create a culture where people want to stay with you. You know, it costs a lot of money and it's a lot of time and effort to put into your employees to train them in their particular area that they're working in your business. And so we want to make them happy, right? We want people to love their jobs and enjoy coming to work and working for, you know, whatever company it is that you're running. So to be able to offer things like that, April, I think are amazing. And that's something that we're looking to do as well here in the near future for ours as well.
Yes. Well, let's chat about it afterwards, because I know it's above a few people's heads. They're like, I don't even want to think about this.
I know.
Yeah. So we have three employees right now who I love to death. And what's really nice is we're able to also get insurance too, which with my husband not working and staying at home, you know, we didn't have insurance. So that was really nice as well, being able to have like a business insurance plan and being able to pick it and all of those things. But we do have quite a few contractors that work with us still, just on small projects here and there. And we love them to death too. We do, like, the last thing that we did was like a virtual run together, and we all got medals. And then a few months before that, we did a baking class together online through a chef in France who, like,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So, like, and it was weird too to see people that, you know, would do projects for us. And we don't, when they're a contractor, we don't really have a lot to, we can't really direct them very much because they're a contractor. So they just turn in projects. And so being able to actually interact with them was really nice. Whereas the employees, we like live and breathe each other. We are texting each other at 8 o'clock at night. It's totally different. So it was a fun experience.
Yeah, I'm glad you just said that. We're actually flying out a huge portion of our team. Not everybody could come, but everyone's coming out to go to Healdsburg this weekend, and we're paying for wine tasting and dinners and everything for them. So I'm really looking forward to actually meeting a lot of our employees for the first time in person, which is crazy, right? The digital world in which we live.
Very crazy. I actually have an employee who only lives about 2.5 hours from me, but because of the pandemic, we've never met in person. But she started as a contractor. And then, you know, it's been so, I have to say, it's been so easy to find teachers lately because of how they've been treated. in many places because of the pandemic and with all the craziness of like all the board meetings and some of the parents that are just very vocal and stuff. Like, we have not had any issues finding people. But yeah, it's crazy that I have not met her in person. So we had a lot of questions about how to find people. So I think, Angie, why don't you start off with that one? Because I know you had some ideas that are a little different from the way that I do it.
Well, I find people, I have used different places that I have looked for people. I have one person that I just have on Upwork because that's where I found them originally. And they've just stayed on there because it's easier, you know, what they issue the 1099 for me and everything like that. So I keep her over there. I've had like teachers who come on just for the summer and help with just some content. And I have found them by just sending out emails and really doing, I did an ad on Facebook as your recommendation. And that got a bunch of people that applied and I found them through there. I have found really great people in the VA group, but I've also not found really great people in there too. So
yeah.
I just got lucky with some of them, I think. And I think that's basically how I've gotten everyone. Just kind of here and there. And my sister-in-law works for me. So she was just looking for part-time work. And I was like, well, I can bring you on and she can do things for me that I trust with my password and stuff until we get those VA logins.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
I'm like a hodgepodge of like a hot mess probably of hiring, but I have the people now and I'm happy with the people that I have at this time. So I think it all worked out.
Yeah, it takes time. I think it takes time. I mean, we've been hiring for 3 years. And like you said, a lot of times you start in like the VA groups. And sometimes you even start with a recommendation from another TPTer and then you start to work with that person and you're like, wow, this is not good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard. Sometimes they take on too many clients. And so it is really hard. I love to work with people that like I can mold. So like we have a professional photographer and she's a contractor because she has a business and she invoices us and all that good stuff, but she had never taken product photos before, but she was open to it. So to me, it was not only nice to give this to someone that I knew, but also it was less expensive than paying some of the ones that are very popular TPTers. And also it was faster because sometimes I was waiting like 3 or 4 weeks to get projects back from some of the ones that other TPTers use. So, you know, with this particular person, she gets me stuff back really fast because we give her a lot of business. So,
yeah, that does make a difference in how many people they're actually working for. I've had people that even I hired and they were doing a really good job in the beginning, but then as they started adding more clients, you know, the quality wasn't as good anymore. So it was tough. And sometimes I had to let those people go, which is not something I ever thought that I would be doing with this business. But
Oh man. Yeah. I have fired so many people.
I pulled up my big girl pants and I got rid of people I didn't want anymore because they weren't really doing what I needed them to do.
Yeah. We used to give people like 100 chances.
Way too many chances.
But now I'm like, yeah, you got one chance. You're done. I just don't have the patience for it. So Caitlin, what does your hiring process look like? I'm assuming it's definitely a little more complex than it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, initially it started out on Upwork, you know, using Upwork as a place to find people. And we have found some wonderful women there who work for our team. One of them actually is one of our full-time employees now. And when I was looking for people on Upwork and I use the same sort of process as a part of our application is to ask people to complete a task, you know, or some sort of like example for the specific role that we're hiring for. So for example, one of them was a designer to actually design our curriculum, to take the ideas that are in like a Google Doc, right, and make them into beautiful worksheets and activities and things like that for students. And so I would ask them to do a small assignment, like a sample assignment. Something else that I do is I include questions on the application as well. Like an example would be, you know, who is your hero and why? things that give me insight into who they are as a person, but also so that I can see that they actually read the application and completed it the way that I asked them to, right? If they don't answer that question, clearly they don't pay attention to detail, and that makes those, you know, all the applications that you're sifting through, it makes it a lot easier to go through them because you can just automatically remove people that don't follow the directions the way that you want them to. So we found some great people on Upwork. We've also found some wonderful people from our community. So we have, you know, our EB Teachers Club and our EB Writing Program. So we have a huge community of middle school English teachers, which are generally the perfect people to hire for a lot of the jobs that we're looking to fill. And we've had, gosh, three or four of our teammates have come directly from our community. And that's fantastic too, because they're bought into our vision. You know, they believe in what they're a part of, and they know the content and the materials and the community really well. So that's been really powerful too, is hiring from within our own community.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference for us as well. Or just somebody who's, and it, for us, like, it's helpful if they've even worked as a contractor before, or even worked on a couple projects before, so they at least know what it looks like. I mean, it is very, we had a lot of people ask, like, well, how do you find the right people if they've never seen your products before? Mm-hmm. So that's sure. Where I think it's really helpful to hire from your audience, which I know I've been sending out emails for a long time, and I've had a couple people say, like, oh, that's gross, you shouldn't send an email out hiring to your list. But I'm like, my email list doesn't think that I made 120 products this year. Like,
yeah. I mean, I don't even know why that would be a problem. Those are the best people who probably want to come work for you anyways. You know, exactly. That is a limiting belief that should just be ignored, to be honest.
Yeah, we get people who reply to our emails all the time asking if we're hiring. And this is just like an email about promotion we're doing. Like, it's mm-hmm. not a job email. So yeah, for us personally, I started doing, you know, like, I did Upwork and a couple other things and did some TPT VAs, had like a mixed bag pretty much. But we, for the last year and a half, have been taking job applications on our website and opening jobs and trying to treat it like a serious business. I think before I thought, oh, if I treat this like an actual application, people are going to laugh because it's not a real business, which is ridiculous. And so we actually do the full hiring process. People put in their applications. But if we're doing something, and it depends on the job, but usually what we'll do is we'll go through all the applications, get rid of the ones that didn't follow the directions, don't meet the requirements, which is like half of them, which is super frustrating. Mm-hmm. And then we'll pick like our top five, and we'll give them something to do. We'll say, like, here's exactly what you'll be doing for us. Do a quick sample, send it in, here's your deadline, go. And then usually from there, it's actually really eye-opening, because beforehand we used to interview people first. So I'd sit down and interview like 5 to 10 people, waste all the time, really fall in love with someone, and then they would give us a sample that was horrible. Mm-hmm. And just didn't meet really what we were looking for. So we just start with the sample first. I don't have everybody do it because, you know, I don't want to look through all those anyway. But, you know, we pick our top five, we get our samples back, and then now it's like a team effort. We all kind of look at the samples, we pick our top two or three, then we do the interviews. And usually from there, it's really hard to decide. But my part-time and full-time employees are all people who have been through that process and have actually done like small projects here and there for us. So we've never actually hired for like a full-time position just from a group of strangers, which is nice, because that would super scare me. We actually just, you know, we've had a couple people in the past that just went above and beyond. They wanted extra projects. They started coming up with ideas on their own. I could like throw them anything and they would complete it and everything was great. And then like slowly but surely, like, they started taking over other tasks, and all of a sudden we have, you know, a full-time employee and part-time employees. So.
And I love it when that happens, because that person knows so many different facets of the business that it's very helpful for you as the business owner that you don't become the gatekeeper, right, of so much knowledge that you're like the only one who knows how to do all of these things. And in fact, I know this is one of your questions here in a moment, but that's a large part of what like our onboarding process is too, is like small tasks at a time and like kind of like a windfall of things before they get to the tasks that I'm actually hiring them for, because I want them to get their feet wet and get like the foundation under them and all of that stuff before I just throw a million things at them and hope for the best, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And for us, like onboarding is very much like that too, where they get in and they start to interact with us. They do a couple of small projects. And then before we know it, like 6 months down the line, they're, you know, we're giving them projects or something to do, and they don't really need any help. They get it done. They get some feedback. They've put it straight into the editing channel. They pull it out. Everything's published, ready to go. I mean, it's crazy how fast the right person can be at like learning how your company works and what you expect and becoming very self-sufficient. We don't really do, we don't really hire people who aren't self-sufficient.
Right.
Which, you know, when you're a lot of times, like 90% of our employees and contractors are teachers. So the great thing there is they're already very self-sufficient and independent, but I just want someone who's going to jump in and say, hey, here's an issue that you didn't think about, and here's how I'm going to solve it.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of person I'm looking for.
That's one of the things that I kind of screen for in our interview questions too, is like trying to solve that part of the employee before I even offer them the job. You know, is this the type of person who is going to like find a problem in the business, come up with a solution, you know, just really managing those expectations of the role and of that person before you even hire them or offer them the job, and the way in which you ask your questions in your interview, I think are really important. And I'll say, you know, one of the first people that we hired, the interview was like a joke. I didn't ask any of the right questions at all. And because I didn't do a good job, I ended up hiring someone who really was kind of awful. And then I ended up having to fire. So it's really important, like from the beginning, that you really understand what you're hiring for and that you're asking the right types of questions in that interview process and even the application process from the beginning, to be quite frank. So you can really get a feel for what type of person this is that you are hiring, because at the end of the day, skills can be taught, right? You can teach anybody to run Facebook ads,
exactly,
and Pinterest, whatever, right? But you can't teach drive. You can't teach passion. You can't teach all of those intangibles. And that's really what I've always been looking for, is those things in the people that I'm hiring.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think sometimes too, if you have a really, because I think an issue that TBTers really struggle with is having like a small pool of people to choose from. If maybe they've put out the job posting, but they don't have a huge network, they don't have a huge email list, they don't want to do like a Facebook ad. And then you kind of end up with like two people who applied, and then you feel stuck. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really even ask the questions because you just desperately need someone to help you, which I've totally been there before and hired someone because we didn't have a very big list of applicants. And that person came on board, and within like 3 days, they were being super rude to the team. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know what? We'd rather just train someone on our team currently to do this social media and then have someone who's just going to be not very, very much a team player. So yeah, I think it's tricky, not only knowing what questions to ask, but having the right amount of applicants and enough people to really choose from for something that's really important.
Yeah. And that ties into something that I just want to add to that. I can't remember who told me that this, but I'm sure you guys have heard it before, but the whole concept of hire slowly, fire fast.
Yeah.
You know, you hire the wrong person because you only have two applicants to choose from. You're going to spend more time, more effort, more money training them. And then all the emotion and difficulty that comes from having to fire somebody, and then you're back at square one anyways, you know,
yeah.
It would have been better to just be patient and spend more time trying to find that right person to begin with than to go through all that other stuff.
Yeah, definitely agree. And I think another thing that people were really curious about was paying for projects. And I think when people are asking about this, they're asking about likely product creation. So they wanted to know hourly or per project. I'm going to throw that one to you, Angie, because I know that you've done both, right?
Yeah, I do both. I mean, it really depends upon the project. If it's, you know, they're creating content for me, it might be by the project. Like, I need 3 sets of 15 questions on this standard, and then I might pay by project for that. But then with editing or other things, I pay hourly for those. Because depending on how much text is on a page, they're going to take more time. And
yeah, because it used to be per page. I think that was really popular a while ago, was paying per page.
And
I feel like a graphic on a page and you're like, wait, why am I paying you for that?
Yeah. So, and per project, like, I mean, with the, like the Pinterest person, social media, you know, I pay them monthly for them taking care of that. And really the big thing is I just want to be able to not have to, like, I've hired people before where I had to prep them so much every month on what they had to do that it was just ended up being more work. So,
yes, you know,
if you need to have a clear vision of what your expectations are, because in the beginning I was hiring people, like you said, where I was just needed someone bad and I just took who I could get because I only had a few applicants. And, you know, then I was hovering over everything they did because I wanted to make sure that it was good and, you know, that I had to have them fixing stuff. So it just, I didn't have the idea of what I wanted from people when I hired them in the beginning. So I really have a clear vision of what you're going to be expecting them to do as well, so that they can do it and also ask questions if they are trying to figure out a certain aspect of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's tricky too, because a lot of people are concerned like, well, if I pay hourly for something, how do I budget for that? And that's something we've had in the past where, you know, we'll have like a bundle we're working on with lots of different resources. And we have a template and we just have a bunch of contractors that are working on creating different resources. And you'll have like one person who will take, I don't know, like 10 hours on one, and the next person will take 4 hours. And you're like, well, that's not really fair because one person's getting paid more. And in the end, they're coming up with the same end result. And then you start to get like suspicious, like, okay, are they just dragging out the hours? Are they tracking them properly? And everybody really works at different, I guess, at different speeds. So
I was going to say, I think that's why it's so important to set the expectations right from the beginning. We have a lot of hourly employees, and I tell them, you know, I expect you to be able to do this, whatever this is, in X amount of time, based on my personal experience, based on, you know, what I've seen from other people on the team. And it's this whole concept, and maybe you guys have heard of this before, but it's Parkinson's law, right? It's going to take us to do something as long as we give ourselves to do it, right? And so if we are looking at a project for someone that we're hiring to do a curriculum for us or a design for us or what have you, it might be, hey, this is the project, you know, I can pay you on a per project basis, or if you want to do it hourly, this is the expectation that I expect you to finish it in, you know, and asking them to come to an agreement with you too. Hey, I can get it done in that time. And if they find themselves halfway through and they're like nowhere near that time that you had, you know, kind of allotted for them or the expectation that you had set for them, they can communicate that to you and you can come back and revisit and talk to them. Hey, why, you know, what's going on? Why is it taking you so long? What areas are you running into? How can I help you be more efficient? And just really guiding them. And I think that that's something that's powerful in having employees too, right? Is really helping them through those difficulties, those efficiencies, those processes, so that you can, you know, help your team or your contractors, whomever you're working with, really work to the greatest of their capability. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think,
agree.
And the more feedback you give them and the more you grow together and you help them see your vision to continue on, I think they just get better and better the longer they work for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've seen that to where we've, and I know a lot of people are like, well, if you don't hire someone who has a TPT store, how are you going to teach them to design TPT products? And we've had a lot of people who, you know, we hire them, they're teachers, they've never made a TPT product before. We create a template, we create a resource, and that way we can gauge how long it's going to take about for them so we know what to pay them. And then usually, like, you know, we give a lot of feedback and so forth, but usually by the third resource, we can't even tell the difference between our creators. When you like pull up one of our bundles, a lot of times it's been created by 6 different teachers, but you can't tell. Which is crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they learn really fast. And that's part of why we do that hiring activity where they actually have to submit something, because a lot of times we'll have a really good resume. We have somebody who we just really like personally in the interview and they answer all the write the questions correctly. But then we look at their sample and we know that they're not going to be very easily trainable because like we're looking for a few things. We're looking for spacing, like having even amount of space around everything drives me nuts. If you don't have that
drives me nuts too.
So like that's a basic requirement. We're looking for organization. Is everything clear? And it's so surprising how many samples we'll get where everything's all over the place. It's very cluttered. Some of the colors that they use are just out of control. And that you can only really train someone to design something to a point. They have to have that visual. It has to be very clean. That's what we look for when we're hiring for someone who's creating curriculum. And they're very trainable. And it just blows my mind that I can open up any of the things that are in editing and they all look like they're designed by the same person, but they're not. So we talked about how you pay for projects. We talked a little bit about the onboarding process. Do either of you have anything in particular to share about onboarding that has been super helpful to you?
Yeah, sure. I'll share a terrible onboarding experience and what we learned from that. So we hired an integrator back in March, I think it was. And I was just so drowning in all of the different things that I was doing in the business that we just gave her everything and really did not create a clear, cohesive onboarding process for her. And she ended up quitting, I think, like 5 or 6 weeks later because it was too much. And that was 100% my fault. And I didn't set her up for success well in that onboarding process. So it was a great learning experience for me to see like, oh, I really screwed this one up. I got to do a better job next time. So when I hired our next hire, which was my executive assistant, I really broke down very slowly the things that I could take off my plate that were super attainable, easy to complete. You know, like if I have her do it once, she's got it under her belt. You know, Brooke is my executive assistant. And it was very much like this slow, methodical process that was intentional. You know, the first week I have people completing, you know, their employee handbook, the I-9, like all that legal stuff that they have to complete. But also spending that whole first week of listening to our podcast, you know, getting an account into our EB teachers dashboard so that they can start to learn the business and kind of read our blog and get to just understand who we are as a company before I expect her to be able to, you know, pitch us to the media and things like that. She really needs to understand the business. And so I looked at everything kind of on a weekly basis and I set it all up in Monday, which is a fantastic, I don't know, what would you call it? Software, I guess, organizational software that we use, project management. And, you know, week one, these were the expectations. And then we'd have a meeting. Hey, how'd it go? What are you still struggling with? What can I help you with? Are you ready to move on to the next steps? What capacity do you have for more? Week two, these are the things we're going to do. And so like very broken down, you know, like chunked down for her. And doing that was just a complete 180 from what I did to our integrator that I hired in March. And as a result, Brooke has been super successful in her role. And I attribute that a lot to her as a person, but also to the fact that it was very intentional and methodical in terms of what we were asking her to do when and building skills and knowledge of the company over time.
Yeah, I can imagine like having someone just all of a sudden step into our world and all of the things that we do. Like take over all of the, I mean, not all of them, but you know, just take over our stuff, like personally, mm-hmm. Like that is overwhelming. It is crazy. The amount of things that we do, the amount of things we know, it to me takes so much time to even like have somebody touch the surface. Like my full-time employee, she very slowly, well, not very slowly. She very quickly learned a lot of stuff, but then slowly started taking over some of the things I was doing. And it took really a lot of time. I can't even imagine hiring somebody who had never seen what I did and never been a part of the company and just been like, here you go. Right. That would be insane. Cause what we do is amazing. It's just incredible how much stuff we do.
One of the things that might be really helpful for listeners too, who are looking to hire, I don't know, like a Pinterest person or product creation or whatever, is recording yourself as you're doing certain parts of a project. I just Loom, like I'll turn on Loom and I'll start recording myself doing whatever it is that I do in the business. And I'll put that into Monday as, you know, an SOP, like a standard operating procedure for that specific thing that I do in the business. And so for Brooke, for example, one of her rocks for Q4, for quarter four, rocks are priorities that we all have in our roles within the business, is to take three other things off of my plate, right? To learn three new things from me in the business that she can take over. Because ultimately, I see her being our director of operations. So I really want her to know everything that I know in my brain. And so I just record myself and I put them into my SOPs. And then eventually those will get moved to that role of director of operations that Brooke will take over. And for her to learn that task, she'll just go watch it and then come back to me with any questions or clarification that she might need. So it's actually not a ton of, like, you don't feel like, I think a lot of the things like we get stuck in is like, oh, I got to sit down with this person for 2 hours. I got to teach them freaking everything, you know, and it becomes overwhelming. And when we're overwhelmed, we don't do anything, right? We pause and we get stuck. But if we record ourselves as we're doing it, we put them into a process, into an SOP to save for later, then it makes it a whole heck of a lot easier to hand off to somebody else slowly over time, right? And I just think that that's a really easy way and approachable way for people to think about handing tasks off to contractors and things like that.
Yeah, that's basically my process, is recording those videos for them as I'm doing stuff. And mine's more simplistic. I just use like Google Drive folders that I share with them. I throw the videos in there and I throw in like different information that they're going to need. But then it makes it even easier when maybe they leave or maybe they're not working out anymore. And then you need to find a new person for that specific position, then you already have those videos and everything ready to go. And it makes it a lot easier the next time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. We use Slack kind of in the same way, where we have different Slack channels for different things. And it allows us, you know, to just, if somebody needs to take over someone's role because somebody leaves or somebody goes on vacation, you know, they're in that channel, they know what's going on, or we add them to that channel if we need to. And they're able to watch all the videos we've made and kind of jump in. So yeah, I feel like most of our communication now is in screen shares. Yeah, like really. We do a lot of screen sharing back and forth.
It's great for feedback too. Like when I'm looking at their work or something like that, I will screen record as I'm looking through it, and then giving them the tips and the improvements right from there. So it really gives them that feedback on the specific things that they did, and then they can continue to improve.
Totally. Yeah.
That's what, so my two employees that oversee a lot of the contractors, they both do that. And it's super helpful. And I think that's part of why we get the resources back and they look so great. And they've really, because a lot of times they show them like, here's how I do this in PowerPoint. And they're showing them as they need it. So they're not necessarily trying to train them on every single design decision. Yeah, like everything they might need to know to design. And usually, you know, it's just as they go, like, oh, hey, I learned this and it's really helped me and it would improve this page. So I think that's really helpful. And I don't even think I started that. I think Miranda, who is my original full-time employee, I think she started doing that and then it just caught on. And that's another thing too, where, you know, having somebody who has great ideas and is, you know, sets the tone for your team, and you can just step back and be like, yes, you just did that better than me. This is really, really nice. But I know
that's
a lot of people.
That's when you know you've hired the right people.
Yes.
Right? Is when they do it better than you.
For sure. That's the goal. And I had such like control issues before. And I think when you control too much of it, it makes it so that they can't do their job. And then you're always just still doing a lot of work anyway. So I think the day they started managing the contractors, getting everything published onto TBT and into our programs for me was like the day where I was like, why didn't I do this years ago? <It's> so crazy. So I think a lot of people are thinking about hiring people to design, but also customer service. So let's talk a little bit about customer service, because a lot of people were concerned about hiring someone to help answer emails and TPT Q&As that maybe don't know about your business or about your products. Angie, do you want to go first on that? You hired out customer service, right?
Out customer service for my TPT Q&A questions and feedback if there's any issues there. I don't have like a customer service person. I still am responding to my emails, but I mostly get info on my Q&As and in the feedback. And my sister-in-law actually does that part for me. And so she's not a teacher and she didn't come from any kind of background. So I had to train her on what I wanted her to do and how to respond to the feedbacks or the Q&As. And then when there was an issue where she didn't know what to answer, then she would bring it to me and we would come up with the answer and then we would put it in a spreadsheet. And then the next time she would have that answer to go back to. And then gradually, you know, she's able to do more and more of that on her own now that she knows the business a little bit more and she's been answering my questions for a long time. So,
and having all those saved replies is super helpful too. Like we use Help Scout, so they are, you save them and it'll just populate into the email. But having even a spreadsheet or any file where you have common questions and common answers is super helpful, especially if you use like, if you screen share. Like for me, we were trying to explain to people how to download digital files that were a part of a print and digital bundle, because the page for that bundle, it makes it so confusing on how to actually get the Google files. We were getting probably like 20 emails a week about it. So we just made a video, like we purchased it on dummy accounts so we could see exactly what it looked like for them. And we're like, here's exactly how you can add these to your drive. And then we've complained about it multiple times because I think it's really unclear. But we have that same video that we just share on a save reply because we know that aspect of purchasing a bundle like that on TBT is a little confusing for buyers and it's just saved us a lot of time.
Yeah, certain product lines I think need more explanation than others. And so when you're continually answering those same questions over and over again, it makes it a lot easier to have it simple and you can send them the video and then if they still have questions, they can let you know.
Yeah, especially if you're getting that same question, a lot of times like Miranda or anyone else on our team will be like, hey, I've been seeing this question like 10, 15 times just in the last, you know, couple of months. We should really make a video on it. And then they'll make a video and we'll put it in our save reply. And then that way we can get it sent out. Yeah. So I think it's super helpful. Caitlin, why don't you go over a little bit about customer service, because you have different aspects. You have TBT, you have your programs, purchase orders, failed payments.
Purchase orders. Oh my God. It's so funny you say that because one of the very first things that I did was have somebody handle those for me. The first time I did a purchase order, I literally had no idea what I was doing. I was like, what's an invoice? Do I send it to you first? I was so confused. And it's just so funny looking back, you know, that was 2 years ago almost when I was still handling all of our emails myself. And now I don't even answer any customer service emails. I'm not even aware, quite frankly, of what kinds of questions are coming in unless it needs to be brought to my attention. So the way that ours is set up, so our business is different. You know, Teachers Pay Teachers is a very small percentage of what our business does. It's largely our membership and then our EB writing program, which is our program that teaches teachers how to teach writing. And I have three different kind of aspects of our customer service. So one person is in charge of billing, like membership happiness, all that type of stuff. We have someone in charge of tech support. And then we also have someone in charge of curriculum type questions. It's hard to find somebody who can really do all three. And also the volume of questions and emails that we get really necessitates that we have those differentiated roles across our customer service. So one of the things that I've found to be incredibly helpful is actually not telling them about the products and having them go research and find the information on their own. So our employees have access to everything. They have access to the back end of our Teachers Pay Teachers. I know the VA login's coming in soon, but I share all of our numbers and financials with our team. So, you know, what we make on TPT is not a secret to anybody who works for us. And I can't remember where I was going with that. What was I saying? I
just totally you're sharing files and sharing information that can answer questions.
All right. The trash comes at 5:45 in the morning and I forgot. And I only got like a couple hours of sleep last night. So my brain is not super sharp right now.
No, I get it. I get like halfway through a thought and then I'm like, this isn't even related to the question. That was
just awesome. Yeah, I do that all the time.
That's like classic podcast style for us. So you're in the right place.
Perfect. I'm glad I fit right in. So they have access to everything, right? So if a teacher is asking a curriculum question about a specific resource, thankfully, the people who respond to curriculum questions have been in our EB Teachers Club membership. They've been a part of our EB writing program. They're employees. They're very well trained, and they can answer a curriculum question as though they were Jessica and me. You know what I mean? Like, they have the same approach, the same philosophy, the same pedagogy. So we know that their response would be what we would say anyways. If there's ever a question, it gets elevated to us, but that rarely happens. In terms of questions with like billing questions or, you know, kind of gray area questions in the billing department, that's where we have what are called our company core values. So the five kind of like guiding principles from which everybody on our team is basically allowed and empowered to make decisions on their own without necessarily having to ask me. Like, that was one of my main things, is I needed to get out of responding to those types of questions and empower my employees to be able to do it and feel good about their answers. So our five core values, you know, one of them is the wow factor. And so I always tell my customer service team, you know, you are answering your email from that capacity, from that core value. Is the person on the other end, the teacher who's reaching out to us for help or with a question or who's upset about billing or whatever it might be, are they walking away from the experience with you going, wow, God, I feel so good about the answer that I got, right? And so sometimes my employees will come to me with a question and they'll say, hey, what do you think I should do? And instead of telling them what I think they should do, I ask them, well, what's your suggestion or what two suggestions do you have and why? And I'll support whatever decision you make, because I want them to feel like they have the capacity, because they do, to answer those types of questions. And so it becomes more of being like the leader, right, of the customer service team, as opposed to being the answer keeper, essentially, for my employees. So I think that that's something that's really powerful, is allowing them to find the answer on their own, allowing them to make a mistake, right? Even though sometimes that's hard, especially in customer service, but that's the way in which we learn, is when we fail, right? When we don't do a good job at something, we learn from that and we're like, oh, we won't make that mistake again. So really empowering them to do it on their own and to find answers on their own has been the best thing for me in handing customer service off to the team. To the point that they know more about our products at this point than I do, you know, because I'm not really in the curriculum part of the team anymore. That's really Jessica's role in the business. So if someone comes with a curriculum question of a specific resource that's been created this month, I honestly probably don't know. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to be better answers. They're going to have better answers than I will.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that place too, where I can answer a lot of questions about the older resources, the ones I made myself. But it's kind of to the point where I do have to refer to someone else usually if for some reason because occasionally I'll take over if everybody's off for a Saturday or a holiday or something, I don't want them to have to work. So I'll take it over. And occasionally I'm like, wow, I need to go into this file. I really don't know the answer to this. But we share a Dropbox drive, like you were saying, just sharing everything with everyone. But we share a Dropbox drive, and they have access to our Teach Away Teacher store and through Kajabi. And so they can go search it out themselves. And if they still don't know how to answer it, they can answer it. But we're really lucky because, you know, two of our employees who manage contractors and do a lot of content creation and just a lot of things for us, you know, they're both teachers. And they kind of span different grade levels. So they're able to really answer any of those questions that our core customer service person can't answer because she's not a teacher. She's a lifesaver, but not a teacher. But just being able to have, even if your store is kind of on the small side, but you want to hire because you hate customer service and it just makes you so beyond angry when people are rude, which happens a lot in customer service. Just like finding somebody who you know, or like Angie, you know, like someone you're related to or that's really good with customer service that maybe just wants to earn a little extra money and they're willing to, you know, learn is great. Like it doesn't necessarily need to be as complex as it is for our businesses.
Yeah. And customer service takes a very special person because it is, I think, probably one of the hardest parts of the business. And I've worked in customer service in multiple jobs that I've had in the past, from like phone answering customer service for a summer job that I had once. And people can be mean. You know, they're coming to you with a problem, and they're coming to you when they're disgruntled and upset about something. And you really want to have somebody who's representing you and your company the way that you want them to. So that, I think, is, you know, that's the type of person that you're hiring for, like, for the type of person that they are, right? Those intangibles, and not the things that you can ultimately teach them how to do.
Yeah, you can train them to answer questions, but you cannot train them to be a patient, nice person when someone's yelling at them through email, which I have always failed at customer service jobs. I've very rarely worked in customer service jobs because I'm just so awful at it. And I could not do it without our customer service. Well, people, because we have a lot of people on our team kind of helping out and jumping in. But every time someone takes a day off and I have to take over emails, because I check like the customer happiness score and help scout every once in a while.
Do they downgrade you when you answer the emails?
Yeah, I'll go in there and be like, wow, there's a lot more red lately. Oh yeah, it's me. It's really bad. I am not a patient person. When people are rude. When people are rude, I'm not patient at all. I'm very mean back. I know it's unbelievable, but I really don't deal with it well. I'm very snarky when people are snarky with me. So yeah, it's only red, and people only complain if they didn't get their way on like a payment issue or something, which we almost always, you know, they usually always get their way when it comes to payments and things like that. But if they didn't get like an immediate 5-minute response, there are some people who will just rate you badly and, you know, they're unhappy. So yeah, it's not my thing.
Sorry, I want to say one other thing in terms of like just things that I see in Facebook groups and stuff like that, of people getting really like upset and emotionally attached to negative feedback, right? Or like comments that are hurtful from buyers and customers and things like that. And that's why I think hiring this out first is probably one of the most important things, so that you can shield yourself from that. You know, you don't want to be getting emotionally involved and have an emotionally involved response, because other people are going to see that or are going to hear about that. You know, I can't remember what the statistic is, and I wish that I had the screenshot. Oh, I do have it in front of me. There is something like a dissatisfied customer will tell 9 to 15 people about their experience. A happy customer who gets their issue resolved will only tell 4 to 6 people about their experience. So if people have a negative experience with your business, they are so much more likely to go tell somebody else about that negative experience than the positive experience, which is why I like to, you know, tell my team, like, we want to be like the Disneyland or like the Nordstrom's of customer service, so that people walk away from us, regardless of how they showed up, angry about something or whatever it is, just feeling good about whatever the resolution ends up being, right? Or that we're kind to them and patient with them. So April, remind me not to hire you for customer service.
Oh, I won't even be applying. So don't worry. It's definitely not my thing.
I mean that with love.
Yeah, it's definitely not my thing. And you have to know where your weaknesses are. Like, if your weakness is customer service or social media or graphic design, whatever it is, that's really where you should start hiring, even if it's just somebody that's going to work on something for you a few hours a week. It doesn't need to be as complicated as what we're doing. But yeah, customer service was the first thing that I hired out for, actually, as consistently. And I'm so glad about it, because our customer service person is so patient and so kind and doesn't take things personally. And I mean, that's part of why I love her. And we've been friends for so long because of that. And normally I don't hire friends. Let's also put that out there too, is I'm very weird about hiring friends because I don't want to ruin any relationships. But sometimes there are people in your life that are so perfect for a job that you just can't avoid it.
So what do you do for pay raises for your VAs or your employees? Are you having regular meetings and you kind of discuss expectations? How do you go about raising the pay for any of your VAs or employees, Caitlin?
Yeah, this is a great question. So it's interesting because, you know, some of our employees have only been with us for 6 months or for a year. For our virtual assistant, you know, it came more out of necessity in terms of raising his hourly rate, because I wanted him to be able to be full-time with us. and, you know, work for us from, you know, 9 to 5, his time, and just be dedicated to our company. And it came more from that need. And so I asked him, I said, you know, what do you need in order to be able to have this be your full-time job? You know, we were paying him a very nice wage, but he came back to me with a number and I looked at our numbers. And for me, it was, yeah, you know what, that you are valuable to the company in that way. I'm happy to give you that raise. So that's how I did it with our VA. And that was after about a year that he was with us. In terms of some of our other employees, it has come from either their roles changing to take on more responsibilities and compensating them for those particular roles that they're taking on now, or it's come from moving somebody from an hourly rate as a part-time employee to a full-time employee. And now as we're coming up on, you know, a lot of our employees' yearly, annual, whatever, why can't I think of what it's called, like review with us, right? We'll be looking at things like that too. A lot of it just stems from is what questions I ask myself, what value are they providing to the company? You know, do I really want to keep this person with our team, with our company? I want them to be happy. And is it a fair wage, right, for the position in which I'm paying them? I don't want to make anybody feel like they're not getting paid what their worth that they bring to the company is and what the job really necessitates. Do you know what I mean? Like there are certain roles within the company, like customer service, tech support. I'm not going to be paying somebody, you know, $65 an hour for that role. You know, I'm looking at it for the role perspective, but also from the person perspective of what they are bringing to the table as an employee.
Yeah. And where they live too is really kind of factoring in. I know at least for us, like here in Arizona, wages are really low, but I can't really pay someone in California, you know, $15 an hour and have it be worth their while. I mean, that would be.
And there are certain states that have certain salary requirements. You know, my California employee that I brought on full time, she had to get paid a certain amount to legally be an exempt employee in California, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And then if you do have employees, you know, paid time off is different from state to state. It was very different. It was actually very eye-opening to see the difference between Arizona and California because, yeah, it's just very eye-opening. But I didn't personally want to give somebody more time off just because of what state they lived in. So that kind of drove how everybody got their paid time off because it needed to be equivalent. So that's difficult. So we have employees in 3 states. And of course, Arizona, not really known for its hiring policies or anything like that. So it does make it a little difficult sometimes. But I know I personally try to at least pay between 25 and 30 an hour for any position just because I know I'm not going to get a lot of buy-in if it's somebody who has to have a skill set and I'm trying to pay them minimum wage, which I don't even know what it is anymore because we don't pay minimum wage.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably, I see signs like everywhere right now, everybody's hiring and they're having a hard time getting employees. So I think part of it is like pay is important. How you treat them is important and flexibility is important. And now more than ever, teachers especially are looking for flexible jobs, whether it's, you know, a few hours a week to make a little extra money to pay for student loans or to pay to go to Disney, like my editor really loves to do, or even like full-time, you know, having the chance to like take your kid to gymnastics and work around that. Like that's just something that most of the employers can't offer. So we really do have, I think, a leg up in hiring people. So I think we pretty much answered most of the questions. Is there anything that either of you can think of that would have made a huge difference for you when your business was a little bit smaller and you were hiring for your first couple of positions?
I think that the biggest thing is just, I continue to say it to myself, is just to hire slowly and fire fast. You know, you really want to make sure that you are getting quality people and people that believe in your vision and your mission and your goal and what your company is doing, right? Gosh, I interviewed somebody and I can't remember, I think it was for a tech support position. And one of my questions was, you know, how would you define what EB Academics does in your own words? She couldn't answer the question. and the interview was over in my mind, right? Like nothing else that she said would have mattered because that person wasn't bought into what we were doing and our goal and what we ultimately, the impact we ultimately want to have, right, on education. So I think finding quality people, being patient with that, and finding people who believe and support wholeheartedly what you are doing is just of paramount importance.
Definitely agree. What about you, Angie?
Just piggybacking on some of that is just making sure that you have a clear expectation of them. I know that I hired quickly in the beginning and I just was trying to find people and fill positions. And then I didn't fire quickly. So I kind of had that whole thing backwards, but it just made for a lot of stress on my end because they weren't really qualified to begin with. And I was just trying to get that help so desperately. But the more time that I spent prepping to hire someone before I even started the process, but just prepping on my end, what I expect from them and everything that I want them to do and how I envision it so that I can get them to see that vision as well. And then they would be a better employee and then they would be spending more time with my business. So I think that just really making sure you know, what exactly you're looking for, not just hiring someone randomly just because you want it so bad.
Yeah, I agree. I would say that mine would definitely kind of match that, but I would say that my biggest tip for people who are hiring and are like a smaller TBTer and are really just looking for a couple things taken off their plates is to just look for somebody that is really going to help you in your business and not get stuck thinking like, oh, I need to have somebody who already knows all the things. So I need to get another TBTer to tell me who to use. Like I need to use someone that all the TBTers use because that's like a mixed bag. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not great, but not every person is going to have the same expectations of a person. So somebody who works really well for your friend or another TBTer may not work out quite as well with you. So you definitely keep that in mind and don't feel like if a person's not working out for you that you're going to, you know, be a bad person if you say, hey, this isn't working out. Because sometimes it's just a person that maybe you know that isn't in the TBT world that's a better fit. So it just always, always, always go with your gut and make sure that this person is a good fit for you, no matter who is referring them or how much people love them. You need to love them. They need to really work for you. So, well, I think that was amazing episode considering this is our second episode back. We already are like an hour and we're so grateful for your time, Caitlin. We really, really appreciate you coming on and answering all of these questions about hiring.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was fun chatting with you guys.
Yeah, I know. It's so nice to talk to a real grown adult.
No, it is nice.
Yes. So why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on social media and anything else that you want to add before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone can find us at EB Academics on Instagram. That's the best place to connect with us. And I'd love to just share if anyone is a middle school English teacher. We also have a book called The Empowered ELA Teacher. If you go to ebacademics.com/book, you can check that out. It is all about lesson planning, which sounds boring as could possibly be, but it is like the best book. I think I'm partial to it. April, yours is right up there with mine. but I'd love to urge you guys to go check it out if you teach middle school English.
Yeah. And if you follow her on Instagram, you're going to see the cutest dogs ever. Loving your dogs. My dogs are the same size, but they're kind of ugly. So nobody wants to see them. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin. We really appreciate it. It was good to chat with you. Good to chat with you, Angie, too. And I'll talk to you the next episode.
That's it for the Grow with Angie and April podcast. Make sure to rate and review so that this podcast can continue to reach teacherpreneurs around the globe. You can find the show notes and more about your hosts at growwithuspodcast.com.